Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. My name is Dave Schrader. My co-host, producer, and best friend sitting across the board from me is not here tonight, but Tim Dennis is. Welcome, Tim. I'm just kidding with you, sir. How are you?
Doing good.
Good. Hey, buddy. We got got a good show.
Yeah, we do.
We've got Mr. Ed Kraft is going to be joining us here in a few moments. We're going to be talking about UFOs, Bigfoots, and...
Bigfoots.
Big,
plural?
Big feet-eye?
I don't know. What is the plural?
Plural of Bigfoot.
Big feet?
Big feeties? I don't know.
Big feety feet.
Yes, big old feety feet. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about all types of aspects of the paranormal, which Mr. Kraft actually looks at as not paranormal, but simply just part of our universe. So he's got a unique perspective on this. We've got a lot of good shows coming up here in the month of July, and I hope you'll stay with us. Tim, we're going to be talking this month about satanic murders.
Ooh.
We're going to be talking about UFOs, demonic possession, the year 2013.
Sounds like late coffee talk to me.
I know, doesn't it? We're also going to be having an amazing night one night this month, where we'll be talking to the amazing Randy.
Very nice.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
We're also working on trying to get the amazing Kreskin to join us.
It's a night of amazings.
That's right. So you may get to hear Kreskin and then Randy all in one show. We're also going to talk about conscious living and dying for our second hour tonight. And our guest is author Anna Maria Hemingway. She's got a brand new book out called Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness.
Hmm.
That's a lot of really...
That's kind of wordy.
Pointy points on Scrabble right there, man.
It is.
Well, let's get into tonight's show. We have our first guest up is Ed Kraft. He served in the United States Army with a secret clearance and served as a volunteer soldier with headquarters United Nations Joint Security Force on the 38th parallel at Panmunjom, Korea. So, Tim, look at that. It's like straight out of MASH.
Yeah.
It's the only way I knew Panmunjom. That's very cool
That's
stuff.
That's pretty sad. You
gotta he's got secret clearance. We got to find out what secret clearance is, and is he far enough removed from this that he can actually explain to us what the clearance was so secretive about?
You can't. Secret clearance is forever, baby.
Is it really?
I think so.
Well, we'll find out
from
him. He's had experiences with a hairy creature at Boy Scouts. I did, too, and he's still serving time, I think.
Oh,
yeah. UFOs, apparitions. So this is going to be an interesting evening, to say the least. Please join us, if you haven't already, in our live chat room. Just go in on darknessradio.com, click on the live chat link, and join us. There's about 30 to 60 to 70 other friends and family and paranormal researchers in there that would love to chat with you and share your ideas and thoughts and you could talk about the show with them as it's going on. But right now we're going to go to Mr. Ed Kraft. You've seen it all, Ed.
Well, I don't know if I've seen it all. But
Now, you, according to your bio, you served in the United States Army with a secret clearance.
That's correct.
Now, what does secret clearance mean for those of us lay people out here? I mean, it sounds all cool and espionage-y, but does it just mean that you knew what kind of toilet paper the you know, colonels and generals were using and nobody else did, or... You got to see alien autopsies.
It meant just that. It's a secret clearance.
Excellent.
I had privy to information that others didn't. My job position put me in My MOS put me in a position to see things and hear things that others didn't. Let's just put it that way. I was a clerk typist by trade, by MOS.
Okay.
My job put me in a position to work for colonels, generals, and higher headquarters officers. So what came across their desk came across mine first.
Now, I understand it was all secret clearance. Are you allowed to say any of the points of did strange things cross their desks that have to do with the topics on yours and my show?
Standard Form 189 clearly states in paragraph 8, unless I am released in writing by an authorized representative of the United States government, I understand that all conditions and obligations imposed by me by this agreement apply during the time I am granted access to classified information and at all times thereafter.
Wow.
Okay.
Do you have that tattooed on your forearm, Ed?
No, actually, I've got my non-disclosure agreement right here.
Okay. I'm just making sure you don't cross any lines while you're talking to us, huh? Well, good deal. Now, let me ask you this. So you had an encounter when you were younger with a hairy creature as a Boy Scout, right, in South Florida?
That's correct.
Now, I want to just touch a little bit on some of these things that have happened in your life to see where we, you know, what got Ed Kraft into doing this and also hosting a radio program about the strange universe around us. How old were you, and was this the ever-popular Florida skunk ape, or do you think it was a Bigfoot, or exactly what's the difference between a skunk ape and a Bigfoot?
Swamp ape. But
swamp ape, okay.
That was coined by another gentleman. The term swamp ape was actually coined by another gentleman. But, I do believe it was the swamp ape down here.
Now, was it followed or preceded by that extremely strong, pungent smell?
Yes, but you got to keep in mind that when we're talking about that pungent smell, that it is, I compare it to just what most people would imagine it would be, wet fur.
Okay.
You know, if you can picture a dog that's been rolling around in the mud and it's all wet and stinky and been, you know, out in the water and mud for 3 or 4 days and hadn't been bathed, you're going to get a stinky dog. Well, that's the type of smell we're talking about here, something that's been out in the swamps. It's wet, it's a damp, moist environment, it's covered in hair, so naturally it's going to stink.
All right, so it wasn't anything extraordinary, no weird, like, you know, otherworldly scent going on with it, just a dirty animal.
No, from what I saw, it appeared to be a bipedal hairy ape.
Now, let me ask you, what color was this creature that you saw?
It was it was nighttime, so I would have to say it was, at night, it appeared to me to be black.
Okay.
I mean, I'm talking in the middle of a swamp, and there's no light out there, so black.
The only reason I ask that is, you know, when I was about 10, 11 years old, I was in Foley, Alabama, where my grandparents had 40 acres, and my cousins and I used to fish down at their pond. And when you'd sit there fishing, you could hear what sounded like something big walking in the woods all the time. I mean, all the time. It'd be just stomping around. And it wasn't known to have bears or anything back there in Foley, Alabama. So, you know, we never really thought about what it could be until the one night my youngest cousin Rob and I were standing there fishing, and we heard something moving towards the back end of the pond. And there's a little bridge that used to be over the back. And as we stood there, what appeared to be like a gray furry paw, if you would, push down part of the branches, and it exposed its face. But it was like a big gray furry Bigfoot. I don't know if that's why I didn't know if maybe that's what you were running into, a different colored species out there as well. So, you know, everybody I always hear, they run into the big brown or black. You know, maybe I just caught a really old Bigfoot.
It's difficult to tell at night. I'm a 13-year-old. I'm out there outside shower. It's pitch black outside. I couldn't tell you if it was green, for crying out loud. You know, it's pitch black outside. It was close enough for me to see it, tell it had hair, but not. I couldn't tell you, you know, for sure whether it was brown or whether it was black.
Could you see any features on the creature in the face at all?
I could make out the fact that it had a face, but I couldn't tell you any of the details. It was about a good 10 yards from me.
Now, you've had quite a few people, I'm sure, that have been on the show talking about Bigfoot excursions, too. And a lot of the people that have come on our show said it almost ends up sounding like just kind of like a giant, dirty hippie that they run into with very humanistic-looking features. Did yours look distinctly animal? You don't know if it was, okay. All right.
You know, I could tell, it was close enough for me to tell that it was ape-like. That was about it. Like I said, it was at the back of the clearing. I was in the shower. I was peeking through the shower door.
All right. Very cool.
I wasn't. Trust me. I wasn't in a hurry to open that shower
door. No, I bet. Spent a little extra time.
Years old, that thing's a lot bigger than I am. I wasn't in a hurry to get out of there.
No doubt. And that was
going to be point blank.
That was in South Florida that took place, right?
Right. And keep in mind now that some years back, there was a news article circulating from the Mayakan skunk ape, which appears to very much to be an orangutan.
Oh, really?
Now, if you look at it, there's been a lot of speculation to whether it's an orangutan. But there have been, since all these hurricanes, there have been a number. There's actually some orangutan habitats and some primate habitats and rescues and things like that throughout Florida. All right, we've had hurricanes, we've had everything. And not all of these primates have been recovered from some of these hurricanes. They don't go around announcing it on the news. Believe it or not, they don't say, oops, we've lost a few apes out there.
Right.
Okay, they don't tell you if they don't get them back. Just like they didn't make it public knowledge up north toward the Winter Haven area that they actually released 10 mountain lions into the general population, out into the green swamp to interbreed with the cougars up there.
Really?
To try to bolster the population.
Well, that's good to know. Which area is that we should avoid going to, Ed?
Well, they did that deliberately to try to increase the natural breeding population of Florida cougars out there.
Wow.
But they don't make that public knowledge because they don't want people panicking.
Okay. Now, you've also seen spirits, you said, on investigations, correct? Full-on apparitions?
Apparitions, yes.
Okay.
I can think of one in particular there in Alabama. Actually, it was a graveyard apparition. I was actually there with my father visiting gravesite, and I'd stepped away, and I believe it or not, it just caught me off guard. It was actually not there for an investigation when I had seen the apparition that I had seen, and it was in an odd place. It was, I don't know if anybody's familiar with the way they have tombstones there in Alabama in certain parts, but limestone happens to be very abundant there
okay.
in certain areas. So most of the headstones and tombstones are made out of limestone.
Right.
Limestone doesn't last very long,
sure.
The older ones. So they tend to deteriorate and things. So you get these old tombstones where the names are all wore off of them and things like that. So you can't tell. A lot of the older ones are like that. And there's an area of the graveyard. There was one in particular section that just kind of struck me as odd. There was a little tombstone off by itself, kind of off the back of the graveyard itself, and it's an old church graveyard cemetery. Okay, there's a little church, country church, and with a side, you know, one of these graveyards to the side of it.
Right.
And in the very, very back is just this one little grave by itself, kind of hidden off. It was off the beaten path, and it was just kind of out of the way, kind of like pushed off to the side. And for some reason, it just struck me as odd, and I was over that way when, of course, I turned around, and there sat this apparition. I mean, plain as day, it was a woman dressed in older clothing, and what struck me as odd is when I turned around and got a glimpse of her, she was only there from just about the shins up.
Oh, really? Okay, so she wasn't fully formed.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
At that point, you know, I realized what it was.
Wow. And then did it actually notice you? Did it seem to interact?
No, it didn't seem to want to interact, nothing. No interaction, absolutely nothing, no acknowledgement or anything. By the time I turned around to yell at my father, and I turned around, she was gone.
Wow. Well, let's get into this before we go into our first break. The reason we're having you on the show is you've got a book out called UFO, The Dossier. It's written by Ed Kraft.
It'll be out, actually, in the beginning of 2009.
2009, okay. Right. And now give people, too, your website information. So if people want to go look you up, how can they find information on you?
They can do that. Best way, they can go to my MySpace page, Dr. Ed Kraft. It's MySpace/Dr. Ed Kraft. Or they can go over to I Am Haunted at iamhaunted.com/Ed Kraft.
Okay, and that's CRAFT.
That's correct.
So you've written a book called UFO the Dossier, and you've done research for years on UFOs. Why decide to do a book now?
Well, I think the timing's right. I think it's finally people are finally ready for it. In the beginning of my book, I give a little information there from a 13-year-old who did a report, a book report, on for school. And in that book report, he goes on to talk about aliens and his opinions and views on UFOs. Well, his school teacher gave him an A on this report. And this was in a mainstream classroom.
Sure.
All right, which tells me that the public is finally ready to accept these views and opinions. If a 13-year-old can take a report like that into a public school system classroom, turn it in as a valid report, and get an A on it, then I think the views on UFOs are changing and that people are ready to accept or at least open their minds up to the these possibilities and start looking at them in a more serious manner. So that's why I decided now is the time to write a book on it.
All right. Well, let's kind of start back, going back in your book and talking about some of the more famous UFO sightings that have happened. And I know you discuss Roswell throughout the book.
Yeah.
You discuss what the I-beam that Jesse Marcel Jr. describes his father bringing home.
Right.
But the government, they're claiming that the kind of strange hieroglyphs that were on this were just symbols that were on tape that used to hold the balloons together, right?
Right. They claim that. Now, I've spoken with Jesse Jr. about this personally. And, you know, one thing you have to consider is that Jesse Jr. is actually a full-blood colonel.
Right.
Okay, he's retired. He's been called back into service 3 times. This
wow.
is a highly intelligent man. He's also a flight surgeon, an actual doctor as well. So he's a very intelligent man. But at the time that his father brought this material home, as a kid, he was playing with, he was young. Back in the 40s, they did not have model airplanes like we have today, the plastic put-together models.
Right.
They carved these. He loved to make model airplanes. But what they would do when he was a child was they actually had to carve them out of balsa wood, the same balsa wood material that the alleged Mogul balloons were made out of. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he would have been very familiar with that material.
Right.
All right, let's establish that fact first.
Now, let's explain, too, Project Mogul, the balloons. Now, was that a weather balloon system that they were setting up, trying to get some information? What exactly was the quote-unquote legitimate story the government tried to pawn on us after they realized that they were trying to hide the UFO stuff?
They came out, the government Air Force came out with their official report, their first official report, which was over 1,000 pages of taxpayers' money.
Right.
They used for this big, long, drawn-out report, which out of that, only about 250 pages pertained to Roswell. The rest were all technical drawings and on weather balloons and such. So basically, it was a big waste of money. Your taxpayer dollars hard at work, as usual. And but anyway, this was basically a listening device that went up on attached to weather balloons, and it was designed to go up into the high up into the atmosphere to listen for it was going to be catch the air currents up there and hopefully be lifted over the Soviet Union where we could listen for Soviet testing of nuclear weapons.
Okay.
We could hear them detonate.
Sure.
But the thing of it is the listening devices were made from common everyday material. Okay, while the project was top secret, the materials used in them were common everyday materials. Nothing that went up in the air in these balloons was top secret stuff. It was all common everyday material.
Okay.
Because keep in mind that these balloons were never meant to be recovered.
Right.
So you didn't want these balloons coming down. If they had top secret materials in them and they crashed in a foreign land, God forbid, you know, they should have something top secret on them.
Exactly.
So they were very common materials.
Well, now, how about these hieroglyphs that were seen? There was like a strange line of just strange little symbols that appeared on this piece that, that Jesse Marcel had brought home and shown to his son, right?
Right.
And the government claims it was just writing on tape that was on part of the balloon.
Right.
What do you, after talking to Jesse Marcel Jr., what do you guys think is has more to do with this? What is the official, or your guys' official stand on the hieroglyphs?
Okay, easy test anybody can do here. First of all, the government's explanation is the tape. The tape that they used had purple writing on it. It came from a toy manufacturer. It had purple symbols on it.
Right.
Jesse does describe these as purple symbols. One thing is that the I-beam itself that Jesse saw was only about a quarter of an inch in width. The tape used was 1 inch in width. All right? Now, in order for what Jesse saw to fit the bill, you would have to take that 1 inch strip of tape that the government used and cut it into four pieces, 1/4 inch in width. Okay, you'd have to take that one inch strip,
right,
and cut it into 4/4 inch pieces.
Okay,
if you did that and you compared it to Jesse's diagram, which Jesse has drawn out on several occasions, he's even had an imitation piece made.
Right, I actually own a copy of the imitation piece.
Good, then you know the symbols I'm talking about. If you take the government's picture, which is out all over the Internet, they even show you in the book itself, which is available online, by the way. If anybody wants the government explanation, you get the online version, which I highly suggest if you want to read the garbage they put out there, get the online version. Don't pay the $65 for the written version because it's the size of a phone book.
Right.
Okay, an L.A. phone book. Unless you got a huge bookshelf, it's not worth buying, okay? But take that 1 inch strip, slice it into four quarter inch pieces, and then see if you can match those 4 inch pieces to Jesse's design.
Right.
Or Jesse's comparison, and you will find that none of them fit.
Well, wasn't the tape too? It had like flowery kind of characters and things
exactly
that were on it. It was very childlike because it was tape that was used for kids' packages and such, correct?
Right. That's what I'm saying. None of the symbols, even if you cut it into quarter inch strips, will fit or match those on Jesse's replica. None.
Right.
And there is no way to make any of those quarter inch pieces compare to that of Jesse. None. There is absolutely no way that they will compare. And that's just a simple experiment that anyone can do.
All right.
Don't believe that, you know, if you believe the government explanation, you can disprove it simply by doing that alone.
Well, we have to take our first break, Ed. Stay with us. And all of you, stay tuned. We're listening to Ed Kraft talking about UFO The Dossier, which is a book that will be coming out early 2009. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Adopting aliens and giving them good homes since 1953. Just don't tell our landlord.
Easy, phone home.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
It's Dave and Tim shacking up in the darkness on the edge of town.
I didn't have an anal probe, and I know that I am not under alien control.
Now it's your turn.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. This evening we're talking to Ed Kraft, and we're talking about a book that he'll be having released in early 2009, UFOs, The Dossier. You know, Ed, back on Wednesday, June 25th, there was an article released on the newspaper out in Britain about a UFO sighting, and they're citing for security probe needed on this. I guess they said a UFO expert says that the latest reported sighting over a military base, and I know I'll butcher the name of the town, but it's Shropshire, I guess, should prompt a formal inquiry into Britain's airspace security. Nick Pope, who used to work for the Ministry of Defense UFO project, has viewed recent footage filmed by a soldier at the Turnhill Barracks and said, "It's all getting very interesting." That's following a series of UFO sightings across Wales that took place 2 weeks ago. In one incident, a police helicopter was forced to swerve sharply as it was apparently buzzed by a strange craft. They said that all started off on June 8th when an object moved very rapidly towards a police helicopter. Now that it's transpired, at the same time, there were other UFO sightings being reported all around the country. And they said that that lends weight to the fact that there does seem to be something odd going on in our airspace. How is it, Ed, that UFOs seem to be able to fly around our restricted airspace and you know, in our military units and nuclear reactors, especially after the advent of 9/11, how do you attribute to the fact that we're not just buzzing these things with our phantom jets and fighters trying to knock them out of the sky?
Well, I think we very well maybe. They seem to have the ability to invade our airspace, which you bring up a very good point, because if you look back as far back as 1952, they have been invading our airspace. That's what brought about the whole UFO fear and cover-up, was the fact that back in 1952, they were actually buzzing the U.S. Capitol building.
That's right. We do want to thank, too, Adrian, our correspondent out in England, for sending that story over. Thank you, Adrian. Yeah, they were buzzing. Now, maybe you can help me with this. I have not done the research on this, my fault, but there's a famous photograph that was on, like, Life magazine or something that had UFOs over, was it the Pentagon or over something?
The Capitol.
The Capitol. Okay, so it was over the Capitol. Was that an actual photograph, or was that doctored just for the cover of the magazine to kind of sell the story?
No, that actually occurred. And I mentioned that in the book. That actually occurred in 1952, where the UFOs actually overflew the Capitol building. Captain Ruppelt, I hope I always butcher his name.
Sure.
but Ruppelt was actually involved, who's the original investigator with Project Blue Book, was called in on that case, but did not get permission to follow through with it. And that actually transpired over two separate weekends. They buzzed the Capitol building. And it was followed up not only by visual sightings in those pictures, but it was confirmed by both military and civilian radar blips.
And what is the government, how did they write that off?
They blamed it on, there was two, they blamed it on birds, and they blamed it on, I believe the other was false echoes. They blamed it on birds, false echoes, meteors, the whole gambit. They went the whole gambit with it. And they still could not explain it away.
Well, meteors, yeah. How do meteors buzz the Capitol?
Exactly. They went the whole, they tried the natural phenomenon method. They went the whole gambit on it. They came up with about four different explanations, and they jumped from one explanation to the next, and they never came up with a quote-unquote formal official explanation that they stuck with. They kept jumping from one to the other.
Well, let me ask you one more thing. First of all, for our listeners, explain, who is Glenn Dennis?
Ah, Mr. Dennis.
Tim, is that a relative of yours over there, Tim Dennis?
I have no idea.
You have no relative? Come on.
Well, I have relatives, but where's he from, Ed?
Glenn Dennis actually lives there in Roswell, New Mexico. He is still alive. And interesting gentleman. He has become a key player in the Roswell story, in Roswell scenario. He is the gentleman who first brought to light the information pertaining to the bodies that were recovered at Roswell. Now, what's interesting about Mr. Dennis is that his credibility has come into question, because he introduced the missing nurse into the whole scenario. He mentions this nurse who told him about seeing the bodies actually in the hospital. And this missing nurse, turns out that no one could track her down. No one could find any information on her. The government explains her away, gives details on a nurse that actually was there. A lot of his details and facts don't check out when it comes to the alien bodies and the facts and the details that he gives. However, there is another gentleman whose story pertaining to the alien bodies and actually being there does turn out to be pretty credible, and that is Eli Benjamin. And so there is some it does stand to lend some credibility to Glenn Dennis in that respect. But Glenn Dennis's actual story has a lot of loopholes in it.
Well, what about Jesse Marcel? He was one of the first official government people on the site, correct?
You got to remember, there were two. There was at least two, possibly three, but there were at least two actual crash sites.
Right.
One had debris. There was a debris field. Then there was an actual crash site, and the actual crash site was not the Brazel Ranch. It was actually over at, the Proctor Farm. It was actually over, Mac Brazel's ranch. It was actually over at toward the town of Corona.
All right.
And that's where they found the bodies.
Ed, with all the research you've done in UFOs, do you think that that UFOs are of an extraterrestrial origin, or do you think it's interdimensional or a mixture of both?
Well, I will say this. I think that I will chalk some up to honest, true misidentification of natural phenomena.
Right.
Okay, a very small percentage.
Right.
I will chalk up a majority to secret government, our own stuff.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to chalk that right up there and be honest and flat out about it. Yes, that's the real deal. What they say it is what it really is. And I'm going to say the percentage I'm concerned with is that real small percentage that still remains unexplained. And that, I think, comes from outside of our atmosphere. You know, it is E.T. phoning home.
Well, do you think that the stuff that we can chalk up to being ours, do you believe that it's ours, but we have the technology because of interaction with the alien races?
I think a percentage of it.
Okay.
I think a percentage of it, yes. I don't think, I do think that, honestly, we came by some of it on our own. But
do you believe that aliens are actually visiting us and working with the government and they're covering it up?
I don't know that to be a fact. I think if that were the case and we were openly working with them, I think we'd be a lot further than we really are. I think what we've gotten just like we have through Roswell, actual recovery. I think we're shooting things down, trying to grab what we can grab. But if we were openly working with them, we'd have a lot more technology than we have.
Why do you think other governments are so open with their thoughts? I mean, Russia's been pretty open with their research in UFO technology and UFOs. Canada, didn't France just come out within the last year or so releasing a bunch of information on their findings?
Well, I think that one thing our government's always shown is that we're big on secrets.
Right.
That's just a fact. The U.S. government is big on keeping secrets because the less we share, the less the government shares with us, its own people, the less it's also sharing with our enemies.
All right, I understand.
It's simple as that, you know, and I have to give them credit and kudos in that respect. You know, I for one, don't want Osama Tommy out there, who's Mr. Terrorist, trying to get hold of information that may do me damage.
Well, that's understandable.
So if alien technology, if we possess alien technology that Mr. Terrorist can use.
Well, we don't even have to. I mean, does the government have to acknowledge that we have alien technology? Can't they just acknowledge, like, you know, France, Britain, Russia, Canada? They've come forward. They're not saying that they have UFO technology or alien technology, but they are admitting that they do believe that we are being watched by something not of this planet or not of this realm. I mean, with their you know, sightings and things that they cannot
I don't think our government can do that because I think they'd have to actually admit that they have known for a while.
Right, but at this point, in 2008, Ed, there's been sightings of UFOs for centuries. It's been more popularized since the 40s, right?
Right, but by admitting that they know that
would the world be up in arms about
it? They've been covering up the truth.
I know, but at this point, everybody already assumes that they've covered up and that they're lying about it. I mean, if the government just came out and said, listen, we did it because we thought it would be better and safer for you. I think we're at a point now where you guys understand, yeah, hey, there are things that happen we don't understand. The galaxy's huge. How can we assume that we're the only living beings out here? Yeah, some strange things happen. Apparently, there's nothing to worry about because if they were going to attack, if they were going to try to destroy us, they would have done it already. I think people would just be happier to have the government open up and just say, hey, we don't know everything, but we do know that there's some weird shit we just can't deal with.
I think in a perfect world, yes, but keep in mind we're dealing with a politicians in a political system that relies on plausible deniability. And it will always be that way.
Well, that would still lead to plausible deniability. They're not claiming that it's UFO. It's simply stuff that they don't know what it is.
No, but they would have lost their plausible deniability by admitting that they had covered up the truth in the first place.
Yeah, I guess. Let me ask you this. What's the battle over L.A.? You mention it in your book.
Battle over L.A., oh, that's a good one. That's that little incident took place back at the beginning of World War II. And that what happened was, for several hours, there was actually sirens went off over L.A., air raid sirens.
Okay. And now, all of this is researchable, right? You can look it up online and find these stories.
Certainly.
Not that you can't find lyings and fake stories online, but, I mean, there are legitimate sources to back up these stories that you talk about.
Oh, yeah. This was printed right there in the L.A. Times. This was a big cover news story. This was right on the front page of the L.A. Times back then in 1942?
Right.
Right at the start of World War II, and there was air raid sirens went off. It was right after the attack on Pearl Harbor and all that good stuff, or sad stuff, rather. I should say good. It was actually quite tragic.
Right.
The air raid sirens went off. Lights in the town went dim, and everybody ran to their bunkers, and the air raid wardens went to their things, and all the spotlights went off, and there's this huge building-sized object floating in the sky for about an hour. And all these spotlights are sitting on this one object. And you can clearly see the object in the only photograph that was taken. And it is a huge, dish-shaped object, which is caught in the center of, like, 10 spotlights. Okay, and then this was in the, like I said, this made headlines, and this photograph was plastered on the L.A. Times, cover of the L.A. Times.
Right.
It sat there. And we sat there shooting at it. There were planes sent to shoot at it, and then there was ground fire, anti-aircraft fire, and you can see the anti-aircraft rounds going off around this object.
And was it just not having an effect? Was
it
the shells?
It didn't have not one single round hit this object.
What were they doing, deflecting?
It didn't appear to hit it, period. I don't know if it was deflecting it, but there was just some really bad shooters on the ground and in the air, but nothing seemed to hit this object.
Strange.
You can see the rounds going off around it, exploding around it.
What was the government cover-up for that? Did they ever...
The mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria, yes, excellent.
And war nerves.
Okay.
That was the official Secretary of the Navy's response.
So what was the photograph then?
Exactly.
A psychic imprint of our mass hysteria
on film?
There was
nothing there. It was mass hysteria and war nerves.
Excellent. Well, speaking of mass hysteria, we're going to take another break now that we've got everybody all edged up. We'll be back with more with Ed Kraft talking about UFOs, the dossier, right after this.
Director's log. I can't believe I'm with these darkness radio dorks again. It's like having bamboo shoved underneath my fingernails. Please, somebody shoot me.
Don't you dare move. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis. Bigfoot, Nessie, Ogopogo, Yeti, Chupacabra. Please stop calling these guys names. Dave and Tim have feelings, you know.
Back to the lock with you, Nessie.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Thank you for listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town and making us part of your Sunday nights. We're here with you every Sunday night from 10 to midnight. Tell your friends, relatives, neighbors, UFOs, aliens, Loch Ness Monster, Chupacabra. Let them know about us. If they want to be on the show, they can give us a call or send us an email over at dave@darknessradio.com.
How does Loch Ness dial the phone? That's what I want to know.
You know what, dude? If he survived all the crap that's gone on, I figured out he's probably got a cell phone by now, too.
Well,
and
probably
a MySpace page.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to send him hot comments.
MySpace.com/Nessie. All right. We're going to get back into tonight's show with Ed Kraft as our guest. Good evening, Ed.
Good evening.
Let me ask you, I want to, you know, one thing that's always been kind of a fun story is that there's reports of secret meetings between ETs and President Eisenhower, right? And
yeah.
Also, I'm curious about this, too.
Have you ever heard? You saw the same movie I did, obviously.
Oh, yeah. And there's also been stories of Nixon taking Jackie Gleason to see the bodies that were recovered from Roswell. What can you tell us? Do you know anything about either one of those stories with Eisenhower? Well, that's covered in your book, too, isn't it?
Right, right, right. There's plenty of those stories to go around. But honestly, there's really very little valid evidence or proof to them.
Is it because Eisenhower was seen wearing that one shirt that said, "My friends came from outer space, and all I got was this crappy T-shirt"?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I kind of chalk those up to while they go in the annals of UFO. I kind of chalk them up to the annals of UFO mythendom.
Okay.
You know, they rank right up there in my book with the one about Elvis and Bigfoot jumping on a UFO.
Wait a minute. You mean that's not true?
Yeah. I really can't I found no validity for it. There's no supporting documents in my book, or I haven't been able to find any supporting evidence through Freedom of Information or anything like that that really staunchly stands out in support that ever occurred, any of that ever occurred.
Let's talk a little bit about Billy Meyer. Explain who Billy Meyer is and what his place in UFO history is.
Billy Meyer is a very interesting gentleman. I've spoken with his American representative, and I'm sure you have as well.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have as well.
Yep.
He was a very nice individual. But Billy Meyer kind of, I don't want to use the term cult, because they're not really a cult, but they're kind of on the verge of what I would call that belief mentality, when it comes to UFOs. They have, he claims to be in contact with a group of benign alien beings.
Right, well, so he has some of the clearest photos ever taken of UFOs.
Right, he does have them. However, if you look at some of his latest work, you will see
the Happy Meal insignia on the bottom of each one.
Exactly. You will see that clarity is becoming, the quality is becoming poorer and poorer and poorer.
Gotcha.
And the mistakes are becoming clearer and clearer and clearer. For instance, the little red plastic cap on the end of the ray gun that is on every child's toy has become clear. The fact that the little plastic model car is disproportionate to the giant plastic spaceship.
Right.
The fact that the plastic car, the coloration in the is the same, is the exact same as the windows in the car aren't clear, that they're white plastic.
Do you have any thoughts on that famous photo he has of the Millennium Falcon battling it out with the USS Enterprise?
Exactly. He has one. Now, when I was training in ninjutsu, there was actually a picture that the Grandmaster had taken at night, and he has a Kusari Fundo, and he's swinging it around at night, and there's an old trick that the ninja would use to blind their opponents. They would take and light a candle or light the end of a rope, and they would swing it out, this lighted weight, toward their opponent in the darkness, and it would actually blind their opponent, you know, just from going from darkness to sudden light like that.
Right.
Would temporarily blind them, and they would swing it out on this rope or this chain, and of course, with having a weight at the end of it, they would hit him in the head with it, but having blinded them. But this chain swinging around makes this nice, neat little light as it swings around one's head.
Right.
And there's this picture in a book of the Grandmaster swinging this chain around. And I noticed in Billy Meyer's case, he's standing in the center of the same kind of ring. And he calls it the Eye of God. And these aliens that he talks with supposedly have created this force field around him. And I looked at the two pictures. I compared the picture of the Grandmaster swinging his chain around with this picture of Billy Meyer's and these aliens creating this force field around him. And they're almost identical.
Well, you mentioned like Billy Meyer almost having like a cult following. You talk about UFO cults in your book, too. You know, what do you make of all these UFO cults and their kind of touch on reality with this UFO phenomena going on?
Well, I think they're like anything. People will try anything when it comes to cults. You know, people are gullible. They're going to believe in anything, mm-hmm. blindly, blind faith. And UFOs are no exception. There are people who want to believe in something. And when it comes to UFOs, hey, UFOs is as good as anything. If people believe that Bigfoot was more intelligent than a human being was, then I'm sure there'd be Bigfoot cults out there, too.
Right, well, I think there are a few. Tim gets email on that all the time, don't you, Tim? Bigfoot.
Sure.
I'm sure there's people out there worshiping Loch Ness Monster, for crying out loud.
We're trying to get our own cult going. The Darknessians. What do you think?
There you go.
Darknessians. Well, now, Ed, the book is great. You kind of present a different approach to UFO phenomena as a whole in the book. Do you actually believe in UFOs?
Sure. I most certainly do.
Okay. Do you believe, though, that, you know, as so many, that these are extraterrestrials? Do you believe that they're interdimensionals, or do you believe they're time travelers?
I believe that they're extraterrestrial. And at the same time, I believe they're time travelers, because I do believe that there is a connection between time and space. In order to travel through space, you have to travel through time.
Right. That is true.
So I think to ask whether or not they're time travelers or space travelers is kind of a trick question there. I think in order to travel through one, you have to travel through the other.
A lot of the people have a strong faith and belief that a lot of UFO activity, especially because it seems to coincide with grand events that take place. And I always talk about on the show the fact that there's some footage of a UFO in restricted airspace over Vatican City shortly after the time of the death of the Pope that can't be discounted. I think they even showed it on CNN. It seems like it's like they're there witnessing parts of history. I always like to imagine that what we're doing is going back in time, and actually in, 2050, when we're able to time travel, we're rewriting history so that we can get the real stories instead of the fake stuff going on.
It very well could be. Again, you're dealing with time and space here. Just like I said, it's a trick question in the sense that we're talking about time-space.
Well, one of the other things that you mention in the book is you talk about cattle mutilations being associated with UFOs. What do you feel is the correlation between these two things? And is there any real, actual, credible cases that can't be explained away by, more conventional ones?
I am not a firm believer in cattle mutilation.
Thank you.
For the simple fact, I take that back. I was a disbeliever in them.
Right.
From a veterinary standpoint, I can write a majority off. But there's one case that stands out in my mind, and that has to do with the Gomez Ranch. Reason being is one of the cattle, and I simply cannot explain this away, I don't know anyone who can. When you find a cow 50 feet in the air in a tree that's been mutilated, how the hell do you explain that?
That cow just might have been really gassy.
unless someone put a bottle rocket up its rear end,
right,
and shot it up in that tree. Please explain to me how it got in that tree.
Well, what's interesting, too? There was a special, which I thought is, funny. It was a special on Chupacabra that ran about 2 years ago. And I tuned in to watch the special on Chupacabra, and they were talking about cattle mutilations and the correlation with Chupacabra. And it was in, New Mexico or Texas. This sheriff who had been dealing with claims of cattle mutilation got a call that there was a freshly dead cow on one of the properties. So what he did was he ran out and he taped it off. And he kept deputies on site for, I think it was 3 days, watching what happens to an actual cow. And just the natural order of death kind of happens. They bloat, they split open, the entrails come out. Then there's certain types of bugs that eat all the soft tissues around the mouth, the udders, the anus, the lips, eyes, things like that.
Exactly.
So, and there's some bugs whose job is to drink the blood and eat this and eat that. And they carried away. And within 2 to 3 days, these cows, this cow had the exact precision cuts and looks of being
mutilated.
And then there'd be those strange branding marks, which were actually bugs that were tunneling underneath the skin, eating away things and eating away at fat.
Which is why I say I stand by that perspective, from a veterinary standpoint, in my years in veterinary medicine as a veterinary assistant for 15 years, retired, I can stand by that. In fact, blood pools to the bottom of the body of a carcass.
Right.
You know, and so most people say it's drained of blood. No, it all pools to the bottom, and of course the parasites work their way from the bottom, and so there's no blood inside the animal.
Right, it's just natural progression
of the
destruction.
Natural
right.
progression, exactly. I have no problem with that concept. What changed my mind in the Gomez case was my good friend Richard Dolan and I had a conversation, which is where I came up with the case involving the cow 50 feet in the air. Had it not been for that case in the Gomez Ranch where they lost all their cattle to mutilations, I would still be sitting here arguing against cattle mutilations as
right.
a valid case. I did some research, the Freedom of Information Act, and looked back at a lot of the cases in that area in which the FBI was actually asked to look into those cases there in New Mexico, in Dulce, New Mexico, pertaining to specifically the Gomez Ranch.
Well,
and anybody can look these up and get them through Freedom of Information Act, and I would encourage them to do so.
Well, Ed, time has slipped away from us pretty quickly here. I appreciate you spending an hour with us this evening. Again, the book is going to be out when?
Early 2009. It's through Llewellyn Worldwide Publishing. They can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all the typical places. And I was speaking with Donald Schmidt, who's also the author of Witness to Roswell, and a good friend of mine, and he is speaking, has spoken with the people there at the Roswell UFO Museum, and they're going to try to get the book in there as well. So if anybody's out that way, they should be able to get a copy in the museum.
Excellent. Well, Ed, thank you very much, and everybody keep an eye out for UFO, the dossier. It'll be coming out in early 2009. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Stay with us. We're going to be back at the top of hour two, where we're going to be talking to Anna Maria Hemingway with her new book, Practicing Conscious, Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. We'll be back with more right after the top of the hour.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.